It's business time. It's business. It's business time.
I know what you're trying to say. You're trying to say it's time for business. It's business time.
Ooh, it's business. It's business.
Welcome back to Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, and it's time for the Download on Chicago Business, sponsored by Signature Bank. This is our weekly segment that talks with local CEOs and entrepreneurs. They tell their stories so we can better understand ours. Part of being an entrepreneur is knowing when to expand, to push through, but it's also knowing when to walk away. Pete Cadence was a serial entrepreneur. First, it was an outsourced sales firm in Evanston. Then he struck gold with a solar energy company in Chicago. Then he rode the wave that was medical marijuana, taking the company GTI public on the Canadian Stock Exchange. That company, by the way, is a $3 billion company today. Then just at the wise old age of 40, Pete walked away. Cadence made business headlines when he decided to retire early, and he is my guest tonight on the Download on Chicago Business. Pete, good to see you.
You too. Thank you, Justin.
You did the op-ed in Cranes when you made this decision back this fall, and you know, you explained a lot of it really came from your family. But talk about why you walked away.
Well, I think that the hallmark of a great entrepreneur is that, you know, not necessarily that they, you know, make the most money or that they have the most employees, but actually that they're self-aware enough to know when they're not fulfilled any longer. And the truth was is that I was waking up each morning and something wasn't fulfilling, something wasn't gratifying. And when I really looked at it, what it was effectively relationship poverty. I was relationship poor. And the people who I wanted to create relationship wealth with were my wife and my three kids and my family and my network of friends too. And I just didn't have any time for them.
Now, you hear that all the time. You hear it from CEOs, from professional sports players. People say, I just want to spend more time with my family. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a cliche.
But I said that, but I said it in a different way, and I meant it. I said, I didn't leave for my family. I left for myself. As selfish as that may sound. Because while I was busy chasing fame and money and prestige, I forgot about chasing memories. And I look back and I say, I missed out on all these amazing things. And selfishly, I wanted to be a part of them. I wanted to be with my family. I wanted to be a relationship wealthy. I wanted to have a great marriage. I wanted all these things. And they seemed to be, in the scheme of things, more important. And also, I think when you're a busy entrepreneur, and like me, I was on the road 150 nights a year, you know, I probably wasn't going to live to 60 at my current pace.
Right.
And so a lot of this is the last thing that I focused on was my own personal well-being. I mean, my blood pressure is down 50 points. I'm down 20 pounds. I'm swimming 3 miles a week. I'm getting a focus on my health, wealth, and health and well-being. And you know, I want to be around for my kids.
Now, a lot of this is not like we heard Erin earlier where she's like, I'm rage quitting. I'm getting out.
Yeah.
You still, when you get out as a CEO, especially the company that you were at with GTI, there's money attached to that get out. You're well off in doing so. You just decided to retire early. You know, in the op-ed, you talked about a situation happened to you with your kids where, as you said, you travel a lot. And this one time, you came home.
Yeah. I came home and, normally when I would come home, my kids would greet me at the door. When the door opened and the alarm buzzed, they'd at least acknowledge me. And in this particular time, I'd been gone for roughly a week. It was kind of a heavy travel week. And it was a Saturday morning, so my kids were all home and they didn't even move a muscle. They didn't look at me. And I of course, didn't say anything to my children because I didn't think they would understand. But I said something to my wife and I really felt this overwhelming sense of guilt that, you know, here they're growing up and they're kind of leaving me behind. I wasn't a material part of their upbringing anymore.
You are a tremendous entrepreneur, and as I mentioned, the jobs you've had in the last, or the companies you've had in the last 15 years. Yeah. But you know, if other CEOs are listening to this and people who are serial entrepreneurs who are starting startups, the message they get from their peers, from guys like Pete Cadence, is you got to get the nose to the grind so nothing else matters. You got to get your company up and running. It's going to be hell. You're going to be working 90 hours a week, but you have to do it.
Well, what was interesting is that the op-ed I wrote in Cranes ended up being one of the most well-read pieces in Cranes all year. In fact, there were more views on that op-ed than there were on the announcement that Rahm Emanuel was leaving office and not running for office again.
Why do you think that was?
I think because it touched a nerve. And I know it touched a nerve because I literally got thousands and thousands of emails, text messages, LinkedIn messages, Facebook messages from people all over the world who connected with what I was saying, who felt my pain, who felt the exact same thing, and it inspired them to think maybe a little bit differently, or maybe even in some case, quit their job. I mean, yeah, look, being a CEO is hard. There is no such thing as balance. That whenever I hear, you know, someone up on a you know, at a speaking event and they talk about the key to being a great CEO is balance, nonsense. It's not possible. Not in this day and age with our phones and everything we have access to. And so, to be honest, the only way I thought I could find balance was to actually cold turkey leave.
I would think, and I don't know much about the world of entrepreneurship in Chicago. I learned through these conversations, but I would think that the whole concept is around an ecosystem in a cycle where you are making money and investing that into the next company. Then you make more money from that company and you invest into the next company. So there's almost no way out. Right. I mean, when you think about it, if you're endgame. So you really have to adjust your goal. How hard is it for someone with your mindset to adjust the end goal?
Well, you know, so that is kind of the way I looked at it. When I started my first company when I was 24. So luckily I started young. And you know, my first company, using a baseball analogy, was like a single. And then my solar energy company was like a double rounding to third. And my third company was a grand slam. And the truth is that at some point enough is enough. Now, some people wake up and there's a certain dollar amount that they thought about they wanted to have in their bank account or whatever, and then they hit that number, and then the next thing they want to double that again or double that again. And I never was motivated by money. I mean, I certainly liked making money. I was motivated by fulfillment and by camaraderie and by relationships. And so once I got to the point of creating some wealth for my family, I kind of said I'd rather be focused more on philanthropy and family, and that's what would be more. I don't need to take it to the next level. I don't need to hit another grand slam.
But is that cycle, especially quitting cold turkey, and I would think it's addictive. I would think that being an entrepreneur is addictive.
I as I said in my op-ed piece at Crain's, I was an addict, and you know, people say to me all the time, I can't wait until you're going to be a CEO again in 3 months. And well, it's been 8 months, so they were already wrong. And I said, you know, like, I want to be a CEO again. There's no question about it. Of course I do. Every day, practically, I wake up with a new idea, and I'm like, oh, I should start this, be the CEO. But the problem is that I can't be a CEO again for the same reason I quit drinking 11 years ago. You know, it's the same type of addiction. I wasn't addicted to alcohol. I just thought it was better for my health to not drink. But I gave it up cold turkey. This was an addiction. I lived to work. And personally, for me, not necessarily for everybody else, for me, that was unhealthy.
You see this a lot with very successful CEOs where they will leave in their wake. They will be sitting in their penthouse with their really, really young wife or really or a husband.
I do
in this
have
case,
a young, beautiful wife.
But the point being that they've been through marriage after marriage after marriage and have really sort of sacrificed their social life and their social family for the good of their company and their wealth.
Look, I have a beautiful wife who's a great mother. We've known each other for 37 years, and we've been married for 11, and I'm hoping for another 50 or 60 or 80. And that's one of the reasons. Like, I wanted to invest more deeply in my marriage and in my wife and in my family, and I hadn't invested enough. You know, I like, one thing about being a CEO is, what the people don't understand, I think, is that, you know, being a CEO is as much about being a business executive and making strategic decisions as it is about being a shrink. I mean, I literally took on all of the drama and the challenges and the trauma that my employees were dealing with, and I helped them adjust because I had to get them on the straight and narrow so they could be working efficiently and effectively. And what ends up happening is their challenges end up taking so much of your mind share that you actually can't focus your mind and your brain on the challenges of your own family. And that's kind of when my family had challenges. My marriage, you know, was a good marriage, but wasn't perfect. I had things I needed to work on at home, but But I wasn't doing that because I was so, my mind was so focused elsewhere.
Does it, and I want to, we'll take a break here and I want to come back and talk about specifically your last company. But as I mentioned in the intro, this is a $3 billion company. Yes. The company has grown even in the 8 months you've been gone.
It's insane.
The industry, is that hard to see as someone who was at the helm of this company growing? I mean, you cashed out and you cashed out well.
Yeah.
But the point being that it continues to grow.
No, you know, I'm still the second largest shareholder of the company. So I'm still materially invested in their well-being and what they do. I love my partners. I love the people I built the business with. And you know what? And my wife has always been curious about how I can walk. I've walked away from three companies now, three companies that I founded or co-founded. My wife has like always wondered, how can you do that without worrying about the ramifications or having any regrets? And I got to tell you, I don't know if it's the way I'm wired or what, but never once have I walked away from any of the three companies I've started and had any regrets.
You have had a tremendous amount of success, and I want to get into this because, you know, the solar energy company, you were able to get that. That was bought by a big power company. Mm-hmm. The GTI here has grown and gone public. What is the secret when you're, you know, because you're not actually, it's not nuts and bolts. It's not making a great product that people are like, oh, this is amazing. I love what Pete Cadence made. You're almost in a way marketing guy. So what is the secret when you're running these startups and getting to a point where people want to buy you?
Right. What I always found is, and I've said this a million times, is that corporate culture eats corporate strategy for breakfast 7 days a week and twice on Sunday. That if you get a bunch of smart people in the room and you don't care who gets the credit and you're all committed to winning and you're all committed to having fun in the process and people like showing up to work every day and they feel like they're treated with dignity and respect. I don't care what you're selling. I don't care if it's a widget. I don't care if it's cannabis. I don't care if it's, you know, liquid gold. You'll find a way to have success. And that has always been my theory. I have had fun. I've engaged people. I think I've been a good manager. And I've really focused on meeting my colleagues where they're at. And that's the key. When you're a good CEO, you're a chameleon. You're constantly bobbing and weaving from one person to the next and paying attention to how they work best. And I think that that's what I was pretty competent at.
Pete Cadence is my guest. He walked away. Serial entrepreneur. But he announced his early retirement from the company GTI, Green Thumb Industries, back in the fall. There's a big piece in Cranes about it. We'll continue the conversation here on the Download in Chicago Business, sponsored by Signature Bank. Pete Cadence on Extension 720. Stay with us.
It's business time.
It is the Download on Chicago Business, sponsored by Signature Bank. You're on Extension 720. I'm Justin Coffin. Pete Cadence in studio with me. He is an entrepreneur. He was the former CEO of GTI, which is a cannabis company, medical marijuana. And this past fall, he walked away. He early retired at the age of 40, and he is my guest in the studio. As we talk about, you know, this segment has been a segment where, and you've been on this before, just this idea of you know, lessons and learning what it, you know, from one entrepreneur to another, or understanding what the going through the mind. But you never ever hear about it ending. No entrepreneur has ever been in here with their business and talked about walking away. It's just not part of the vernacular,
right? And I think that it's frankly something that people need to get more comfortable talking about. Again, you know, at what point is enough enough? It is hard. I mean, as I've said a number of times, like, you know, you get addicted to people wanting to interview you and to being in the media. And I was on the cover of Cranes six times over my career. You know, for me, that made me feel good. But as my life transitioned, as I had three children, and as I worked on my philanthropy, stuff like that started becoming less and less important to me. And while I still have an ego, and there's no doubt, and I tried to be very rigorously honest with myself, you know, I don't care as much about being recognized, and I don't care as much about being famous. And frankly, I want to be a little bit more private. In fact, if you remember correctly,
yeah, you said no.
The first time you asked me to do this,
you said no.
Yeah, you read, and I said no. I don't want this to be a media story. I wrote that op-ed in Cranes as a cathartic thing for myself, and it turned out that it went viral. That's not what I intended. So I did this for myself, and I frankly wish that in this day and age that more people, more executives did things for themselves.
You know, I don't want to get too heady and financial here, but walking away is not really part of the capitalistic plan.
Yeah.
When you talk about capitalism and you talk about being your own boss and your own companies, the goal is to continue. The goal is to accumulate wealth. That right. is the system we live in.
Right.
So you're when you say, I wish more people would do it, that's not part of the plan.
But there's a lot of different permutations of wealth. Wealth isn't necessarily just what's in your bank account. I mean, yeah, I had to feel secure from a financial perspective that I could live the life I want to live, go on the vacations I want to go on, send my kids to college. You know, but there are different permutations of wealth, as I talked about, and one of those is relationship wealth, you know, or you know, the wealth of fulfillment, or the wealth of, you know, the gratification and the wealth of helping others. And those are the things I felt that I was poor in those areas. And so I had to analyze the different permutations of wealth, not just the wealth of means and what was in my bank account. And that's what I really did. And I think if a lot of executives, you know, being a CEO is an extraordinarily lonely job. You don't have a lot of people to talk to. When I was a CEO, it was tough to talk to my wife. She didn't understand the stuff I was going through. It's tough to talk to your employees because you can't tell them a lot of stuff. A lot of it's confidential, and if you worry them, maybe they'll leave. So all of a sudden, you find yourself in this ivory tower, very isolated with no one to talk to. It's a pretty difficult position to be in, and I wanted to talk to people. I wanted to have quality relationships, and I just didn't.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because I would think that a lot of CEOs and executives, they find that kind of solace or that warmth and that companionship in other CEOs. And you talked about people, thousands of people reaching out to you, and that article obviously going viral. How much pushback did you get? How much from your friends were like, no, this is not part of the plan?
Yeah, I mean, I do have a crew of Chicago CEO buddies, and I was just named a Henry Crown Fellow of the Aspen Institute, so I'm going to inherit another 20 amazing fellow CEOs as friends starting here in August. And that was an important network. Al Goldstein here in Chicago, Robbie Nathan, Matt Matros, these are just some of my best friends who started great businesses in Chicago, and we were able to talk openly and honestly. But yeah, you know, other than that, man, it was very, very tricky to talk to people honestly about the way I was feeling, and I felt on an island oftentimes.
You know, I think about you, and I think about the ecosystem that is Chicago startup community, and you have lived through it, and yep. you are now on the other side of it, not unlike a retired professional sports player who sits at the desk. What do you think of it? What do you think of is it prime for takeover? Is it still as lucrative and fertile as it once was when you were running solar energy companies?
You mean the entrepreneurial ecosystem yeah. here in Chicago? Yeah, I think the entrepreneurial ecosystem in Chicago is incredible. You know, the one beautiful thing about Chicago is if you pick up the phone and you call someone, you know, and you want help, they will help you. Chicago is a high degree of camaraderie. There's a willingness to help others. And so I think it's a great community. The one thing that I don't like, and that I will make sure that I don't do, is that I have seen a number of Chicago entrepreneurs become successful, and then what do? They leave. Now, some of it is they don't like the tax regime here, so they want to be in Florida. Some of it is they don't like the climate here, so they want to be in California. But whatever it may be, I have committed that I am going to continue to work and donate my time, energy, and resources in this community, both to the entrepreneurial community as well as to the impoverished community and other communities, because I feel like I can't abandon the community, the city that gave me so much. This city and its broad shoulders lifted me up. I can't leave. Yeah. Would I like the Florida tax regime with no state income tax? Of course I would. But I don't think that's in the cards for me, because I feel like I have a moral imperative and obligation to stay here and give back.
You hear a lot of people who say, you know, because of Illinois' tax regime, as you talk about, people are leaving in droves, the business. And you had a governor in the last 4 years that was talking about that, and even the governor now. But you recognize, and I've heard this before, and the reason I pick it up here in these conversations, is there are some states that just are, it doesn't matter if you can't be competitive. You can't be competitive with no sales tax with Florida. There are some states so sometimes that's misleading when people say they're leaving the state of Illinois because of its tax regime, because truly they're going to somewhere where there's just, you can't even compete with it.
Well, look, I had a guy tell me the other day that he was allergic to a fellow CEO said he was allergic to taxes. I said, why? You know, because I, you know, look, I don't want the IRS to come tax me, you know, two times more than they're already going to tax me. But, you know, I am not allergic to taxes. I feel like it's part of a civic duty that we have. I mean, we see the homeless people on our streets. We see infrastructure crumbling. We see the school systems here struggling and kids having to walk through gang lines to get to school. It is our civic duty. I have always said to everyone in my orbit, to those who much is given, much is expected. And I feel like I have been very fortunate, and I have an expectation by society, by the city of Chicago, to give back. And if that means I'm going to be taxed in the process, so be it. So I'm not one of these people who spends a lot of time pining and trying to circumnavigate, you know, how to pay taxes and trying to figure out nuanced ways to get around it. I don't care. I will pay my civic duty. I will pay my taxes because I think I have an obligation to do so. And so I'm not leaving Illinois for that.
So when are you coming back? When's the next
WGN?
When's this next startup?
Oh no, you know, no. So my next startups will be poverty and education related startups. I've started an initiative called the Hope Initiative, helping our population educate in my hometown of Toledo, Ohio. $125 million initiative to make sure that every kid who goes to public school can get to college.
It's great. Pete Cadence in studio tonight, my guest in the Download in Chicago Business. Pete, thanks for being here, man.
Thank you, Justin. Appreciate it.